We're holding on page 40 in Erevin, about the middle of the page, towards the end of our Slum and Hay. We were talking about the importance of the frame of mind that a person is for davening or for learning Torah or for paskening halacha. So now more on that topic, but related topic, as far as what times of day are good for learning. So Amar Rav Yehuda, even a Leilia El Lashinta. So Rav Yehuda says the night was created only for sleep. Now a person should be learning Torah at night. So Tosfos says we're talking about the nights which are short anyway. Tkufas Tammuz, the summer nights are anyhow short. A person got to sleep sometime, so better let him be sleeping during those nights rather than the longer nights. Marsha says it could be different. The next thing in the Gemara is going to say as far as the moon. So Marsha draws a distinction between whether it's a night when the moon is shining versus when not. When there's no moonlight anyhow and you don't have any other light to learn by, then go ahead and go to sleep. But when there's moonlight, then that's the next thing. So Rish Lakish says the moon was created to shine at night, only that you should be able to review your learning. Girsa doesn't necessarily mean in-depth learning. It just means like reviewing your learning. But at least the purpose of the light at night, of the moon is that it's created for that. It was made for that purpose. So Marshall explains, in other words, that's the difference. When there's moonlight, then at least there's some light, then it's meant for learning, as opposed to when there's no moonlight at all, and then you can't learn anyhow. So then with that said, it is interesting that Duke Soferin brings a girsa that was in an early print of Gemara from the late 1400s, one of the earliest printings, that had, instead of the word sihara, it has the word tihara, which means the noontime. So according to that girsa, if that girsa is correct and it wasn't just a printer's mistake, then it means that Rish Lakish is not talking about the nighttime and the moon. Rather, he's talking about the reason why Hashem made there be a brilliant light in the middle of the day is that you should be able to learn Torah by the light of that. But most of the Mefarshim seem to understand according to the girsa sihara as we have it. So continues the Gemara. Amri le Rabbanan le Rab Zera, the Chachamim said to Rab Zera, Mechadid in Shmaitzach. Your teachings in Torah are very sharp. So he says, because these are teachings that I learned by day, and the day is the better time to learn Torah. So you have different perspectives then, whether the better time to learn Torah is by day or by night. Marshall says, after all, I mean, okay, you have moonlight, but still you have much more bright light by day. So therefore a person is able to focus better and to be able to learn better. And that's what Rav Zera is saying, that I learned by day. With that said, I mean, the Rambam points out that if a particular, he says, if a person wants to be zeicha to keser Torah, to the crown of Torah, then he should make sure not to waste his nights, but to use them for learning. So there's both, really. I mean, it also depends. It also depends what a person is doing. What a person is doing by day. If a person has to work for a living, then he may not have time to learn Torah during the day. Then let him learn by night. But if he's anyway not doing anything useful during the day, or he's living off a trust fund or whatever, then by all means, then let him spend his days learning Torah. Further in this connection, Amrin le binsei de Rav Chista le Rav Chista. Rav Chista's daughters one time asked him, "Loi boi ma ninum porta, Rebbe, don't you want to sleep sometime?" He was apparently learning both by day and by night. Amala, so he says to her or to them, "Hashta osu yoyme da arichi uktini." Soon there will come the days that are long and short. They're long as far as a long time that a person is going to be after 120. But they're short as far as Torah and mitzvahs, because you can't do Torah and mitzvahs after 120, v'ninam tova, and then we'll have plenty of sleep. So in other words, and Marsha explains also, it means different. It's oruch will receive a schar in Olam Hazeh, l'man yarichun yamecha b'olam haba. But on the other hand, hayoyim la'asosim l'mocha l'kabel scharam, so it's not going to be the time to do Torah and mitzvahs anymore. So therefore, then I'll have plenty of time to sleep, but now we have to put our time to good use. Rav Nachman Yitzchok says in this connection, we are daytime workers. In other words, he's agreeing more with Rav Zera that the better time to learn Torah is by day, that you'll get more out of it then. And in fact, Maharsha says, he's saying, in effect, the only reason, if you didn't spend your time properly during the day, then make up for it at night. But otherwise, Reb Nachman, it's like the same, basically, the avodah is to learn by day. You have also, on a deeper level, you have the vort and hayom yom, anan poyledi, mama anan, means that yom is ur, means that our job in the world is to bring light, and is to bring light of all the course into the world. And the Gemara finishes off, Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Yazif u'para, Rav Acha bar Yaakov would borrow and then pay back. Meaning, so Rashi explains, he would have a kvius that he's going to learn X amount per day. So he's learning by day, but sometimes during the day, he'd be busy with parnasa or with other things. So then he'd make up for it at night. So similar to Rav Nachman Yitzchok's approach, the way Maharsha understands it, that the basic good time to learn is by day. And if you can't make it, then you make it up by night. In a similar vein, actually, it talks about when it comes to the shiurim of chitas, for example, it's better to do, and Rambam, that it's better to do them during the day rather than leaving them for the following night. If you didn't manage, then fine, you make it up then, but ideally they should be done during the day. Getting back now to the frame of mind that a person should be in when he davens, and we talked about yesterday about that there's different things when Rav Chanina wouldn't daven on a day when he was angry, and we talked about when a person drank a certain amount of wine, and similarly. So Omer Rabbi Elazar, Hababa Derech Ha'Yispalo Gimel Yomim. If a person is traveling on the road, he should not daven for 3 days, because again, his mind is still not completely at ease because of the travel. Shenema, and again, we don't apply this halacha nowadays, because then we'd never daven because we don't have kavana anymore. Shenema, as you find by Ezra, so he's coming with a contingent of Jews to Eretz Yisrael. This is a few years after the second Beis Hamikdash had been built, and he's coming to strengthen the community over there and have them men and make sure that they're behaving according to Torah and Mitzvahs. So he describes he had the whole group over there with him of a couple thousand people. He says, I gathered them by the river that flows to Ahava, a name of a place in Babel, Vanachnasham Yomim Shlosha. And we camped there for 3 days. And then he says, I started checking among the people to see whether there were any Levium among them. And he found, in fact, there weren't. And they had to send messengers back to Bavel to have some Levium join them as well. So, in fact, the Gemara in Yevamos tells us that because of that, Ezra penalized the Levium. And there's Machloikas over there, what exactly the penalty was. It had something to do with Maiserishin. One opinion over there in the Gemara is that he took away that from now on, they don't receive Maiserishin. Only the Kohenim do instead. And another opinion there is that he said that from now on, either Kohenim or Levium can receive it, not exclusively Levium. Whatever the point is, that we see that he waited 3 days after they had camped there. Only then did he start investigating among the people, because until then, he wouldn't have the bina, he wouldn't be in the frame of mind to be able to understand carefully. Maharsha says another point of it as well. So you have Shemana Esrei. Yesterday, we talked about the word Mogin as representing Shemana Esrei, according to Rashi's chat, because Mogin is the first bracha of Shemana Esrei. But what's the first bracha of the middle brachas of Shemana Esrei, where we ask Hashem for our needs, is Chanunimit Chachachma Bina Vadas. So therefore, if a person is not in a frame of mind to have bina, then, and in fact, in the psukim over there in Ezra, he goes on to say that we daven to Hashem to make to help us travel safely, because it was a dangerous road to Eretz Yisrael. So we see also that they needed to have bina. We see that they, valvina ba'am, only after they camped there for 3 days, could they be in the frame of mind to say the bracha chanenim et chachachma bina vadas, and to be asking Hashem to have a successful trip. So the Gemara continues, Avur de Shmuel, ki hava osi ba'urcha, tlosa yom, lava matzli. The father of Shmuel, when he did that, when he was traveling on the road for 3 days, he wouldn't daven. Eitz Yosef actually points out there's a nuance of difference between what Rabbi Lozer is saying and what Avur de Shmuel did. Rabbi Lozer is saying if he traveled, then for the next 3 days after that, you shouldn't daven, Shemana Esrei, until you're in the frame of mind to. Avur de Shmuel took the view, it's not a matter of how long after the trip. How long does the trip itself have to last before it'll get to the point where it makes you confused and you're not in the frame of mind to daven? So he held only a 3 days trip would do that. If it's a trip any shorter than that, then it's not an issue. But he would daven within the 3 days after he did that, because all it means is on the day that he came home from his trip, he wouldn't daven, but the next day he would. That's how Eitz Yosef works. The Gemara continues, Shmuel le'matzli be'beisad de'isbe shichra. Shmuel would not daven in a house where there was beer, because the smell of the beer, Rashi explains, would intoxicate him. Rapopo le matzli the base of the isbe harisina, and similarly Rapopo would not daven in a house where there's harisina. Harisina you find in various places in Shas is a dish made of fish fried in oil with fat, so it was kind of their version of gefilte fish, but the smell of it bothered him, and therefore he wouldn't daven in a house where you have that. So you have in Shulchan Aruch, I mean, technically you're only also to daven in a place where there's smells of human waste or certain kinds of animal waste or whatever. But in addition, you also have, if there's other kinds of smells that bother you, it's better you should get rid of them also. Getting back to the matter of wine and the effect that it has on a person. Actually, you know what? We'll do this now, and we'll finish off this paragraph because between now and between, yeah. When a person is appeased with his wine, so meaning, in other words, it actually says that, so he's been upset about something, but they come and ask him mechila, and when he feels good because he drank wine, then he's willing to be in a more forgiving mood. Yesh b'midas koinoi, such a person has in him a certain semblance of Hashem's way of thinking. As we find when Noach brought korbanos after the mabul, that Hashem, so to speak, is appeased by them. Now, Rashi says, we just said that the smell of beer can be intoxicating also. So the same way, so to speak, Hashem is being affected by the smell of the korbanos and being appeased. So by the same token, if a person is appeased by tasting wine. Maushal says, no, that's a bit of a doicha. He says, no, the vort is that, sure, when you want to make up with somebody, you did bad to somebody and you want to make up for him, so you make a party, you make a fabrengen, and you want to make him feel better. But the chaver might say, you know what, then in that case, fine, you bring your own refreshments. Why should I have to pay for it? If instead he's willing, you can take my own wine and use it for this fabrengen, for this meal to make up, and I'm willing to go along with that. Yesh maybe das koinoi, and the comparison is when Noach brings the korbanos, who do the korbanos belong to after all? They belong to Hashem. Everything in the world belongs to Hashem. And yet Hashem is accepting it graciously, showing therefore that if a person acts in that way, yesh maybe das koinoi. Marshall also refers over here to something interesting that he says on the Gemara in Gittin, and then at the beginning of the story over there, Kamsa bar Kamsa. The vort is, we're saying over here, that a person who's mispat to be yena, yesh bedas koinoi. Now, what happened over there? You have the balabos over there in the story, and Bakamtsa was his enemy, and he didn't want him in his party. Now, at least once Bakamtsa showed up because of the mistaken invitation, at least the host should have had, like we say over here, yesh bedas koinoi, and be willing to get along with him for the sake of not making a public embarrassment of Bakamtsa, and have, okay, I had you mispat to be yena, and therefore I'll have das koinoi, and I'll leave him be. And instead, he didn't, and that led to the whole consequences that are described there in the Gemara. The Rama also makes an interesting point in this connection. He says, we talked about yesterday that when a person drinks wine or any kind of alcoholic drink, sometimes it makes him feel very big and very proud of himself. Gaiva, we called it in the Gemara yesterday. So now, if on the other hand, the person is not like that, just the opposite. Wine has an effect on him that it mellows him and makes him more willing to be appeased and to be moichel the other guy and set aside his own yeshers. Yesh b'midas koinoi. Then that's a special thing. It shows that he has a certain mentality of Hashem's. When a person is calmed down by drinking wine, so he's able to drink wine and he's able to hold it and not get muddled by it, then it shows he has a semblance of the das of the 70 skenim of the Sanhedrin. Because we see there's a comparison. Yayin nitin b'shivim osius, the soid nitin b'shivim osius. The word yayin is gematria 70. The word soid, as in soy de iber, which the San Chachamim of the Sanhedrin did, and other such things, is also gematria soid, and nichnas yayin yotza soid. Usually, when wine goes in, secrets go out. Here, where the person is able to hold it and keep his secrets in, then he's the equivalent of the Sanhedrin of 70. Because it's a rare talent, a rare ability that a person should be able to do that. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Chanan, Le'nivra yayin ba'olam hazeh elo l'nacham aveilim o l'shalom b'schar l'rashoyim. Really, the only reason wine was created in this world is to comfort people who are in aveilos. The Gemara mentions in Ksubas that they used to have by the meal, by an oval's house, they would give him 10 cups of wine to drink, a few before the meal, during the meal, after the meal, in order to help, in order to make him feel better. So for that, all the shalombo schar the rishoyim, and to pay a reward to the rishoyim. That this way they drink and they enjoy themselves, and this way they have their olam haba in this world rather than the next world. Shenema, as the pasuk says, tnu sheicha la'oved v'gomer. The pasuk says, give strong drink to the oved. The oved is the one who's being lost, meaning the rasha. And then the pasuk continues, v'yayin l'mari nafesh, and wine to the people who are bitter in spirit, meaning the aved. Kiddush and Lel Shabbos is daraisa, but not necessarily making on wine as daraisa per se. What Rav Chanina is saying is, had wine not been created for these purposes, then the mitzvah would have been to make kiddush on something else. Marsha explains that the word sheichar is mentioned in connection with oved, which again Rashi says is the rasha, because the word sheichar has the same letters as schar, so it hints at this point that the rasha has wine for his schar in this world. On the other hand, when we say yayin, and the Gemara explains in Yuma that the reason it's called yayin is because it's related to the word taniya, like yavin echa, taniya vaniya, which means mourning. So therefore, it's appropriate to give it to people who are in mourning. The Gemara continues, Amar of Chanina or Chanan bar Papa, kol she'en yayin nishpach the beisei kamayim. Anybody who wine is not poured out in his house like water, ain't a bechlal bracha, is not included in the concept of bracha, meaning Rashi says he hasn't reached the ultimate level of bracha. Even if he's rich in other areas, he's still lacking something because he doesn't have that. So what do we mean nishbach v'beisek hamayim? So there's a few explanations among the mefoshim. It means that when you're pouring, a little bit of it sometimes spills over. If you have a person who doesn't mind that, then it shows that he's reaching the ultimate level of bracha. For this reason, we have, by Havdalah particularly, we have a little bit of the wine spill over as a simen bracha. It's related to this point. Other mefarshim also point out it can mean that the person is generous to orchim and wine flows in his house like water. In other words, he serves them wine generously. He doesn't say, well, it's expensive stuff, I got to give them water or other cheaper drinks like that. So when he does that, then it shows that he has the ultimate degree of bracha. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Uveirach es lach mocha v'esmei mecha, Hashem will bless your bread and your water. Now, what does water mean over here? We have to show that there's a comparison here between bread and water. Ma lechem shenikach b'kesef meiser. Now, bread, by definition, is something that you could buy with meiser sheni money. The rule is, you're allowed, once you had meiser sheni, and then you exchange it for money, and you bring the money to your shalayim, what kind of food are you allowed to buy in your shalayim? So the Gemara explains earlier in the Masechta, there was a halacha piece about it, that you have to buy something that grows directly or indirectly from the ground. So, for example, things made from plants or from animals, because animals eat grass from the ground. The Gemara has a machlokas over there, whether it includes fish and so forth. But for example, not water. You can't buy water with ma'aser sheni money because that doesn't grow from the ground. It has to be pre the gedulei karka, as the Gemara discusses over there. So, but bread comes from wheat, which grows from the ground. So that you can buy with ma'aser sheni money. Af tanach mayim dinikochem b'kesef ma'aser. So the water in the pasuk must refer also to something that you're able to buy with ma'aser sheni money. So what would that be? Wine, because wine is pre-mipri, the gedulei karka, because it comes from grapes that grow from the ground. And yet the pasuk is calling it water. So we see therefore that the pasuk, so even though it's referring to wine, it's nicknaming it water to show this connection that the wine should be flowing and be able to be poured out in the house like water. So therefore, so if the person is allowing wine to be poured in his house like water, again, a little bit of it flows over and he doesn't mind, or he gives generously to the archim, then there is bracha in his house, then you have uveirach, and the implication is, if not, then not. And the Gemara finishes off talking about this matter of the way a person feels, which I'll talk about whether a person feels after he drank wine or after he traveled and so forth. So Amar Papa or Ila, Begimel Dvarim Adam Nikur. There are three things that are three circumstances where you can really tell what a person is, whether he's an Erlacha person. Bekoisoi, Bekisoi, Bekasoi. In his pocket, meaning, in other words, so in his cup, meaning, is he, when he drinks, then how is he? Is he calm afterwards, or does he go wild? Bekisoi, as far as his pocket, as far as when he does business, is he doing business honestly? And Bekasoi, Rashi says that he doesn't get too angry. at people. So then with those kinds of things, you can tell what a person really is. Some say also when he laughs, you can tell by the way a person laughs, what kind of person he is. Why these three things? Marsha here and a number of other places in Shas talks about the idea that there's three basic areas in life. There's the relationship between you and Hashem, Beinanu L'Makom. There's a relationship between you and other people, Beinanu L'Chaveiro. And then there's your relationship with yourself. So each of these three things, he says, represents being toiv in one of those areas. So then it shows he's good for himself, that he knows how to behave himself properly. B'kisoy, that he does business honestly, so then he's toiv labrius. And Bekase, if he doesn't get angry, then he's Tov L'Shamayim, because on the other hand, elsewhere, the Gemara says that if one person gets angry, Kila Ovidav Adizara. Then Marsha mentions another point as well, that you can distinguish what a person does. You have what's pleasant, when you talk about something being good, what do we mean good in what sense? It can be good as in the sense it's pleasant. It can be that it's useful, that it accomplishes what it's supposed to, or just that it's good. So therefore, so each of these three things, he says, refers to these things. When a person, that he drinks properly, then it means as far as the orev, that what's pleasant to him, the wine that he drinks, it makes him act in a pleasant way. Bekisoy is he does in the effective way, or the other way around, he says, fakir, when a person drinks and acts wrongly, then that shows that he used the orev wrongly. When he does business dishonestly, it shows that he's only thinking of what's moyel loy, only what's effective for him, and not taking into consideration others. And koyas is kilo over davar dezara, so therefore he's the opposite of toiv. So that's why all these three things go together as well. Another point that Mefor should make is those are the times when a person is likely to have the least control after he drank, when he's doing business and there's a bill, there's a lot of money on the line, or when he gets angry, and then you can really see what the person is made out of. The Yeshayim after Sachko, Yeshayim also when a person laughs, because then again, a person may not be fully in control. So if he is, then you can see what he's really made of. All right, on to Yechezker. What we might do actually the beginning of next week, during the days that we have left, we may do only Yechezkel and not Ein Yaakov, because I wanted to try to finish as much as possible of Perek Mem Beis Mem Gimel, and here we're only starting Perek Mem Beis now, so we'll see. Anyway, so we're holding at the beginning of Perek Mem Beis. A lot of what we're going to learn in this Perek is something new in the third Beis Mikdash, which didn't exist in the first or second, at least it's not recorded that it did. There's also a lot of psukim in here that are very difficult to understand. Rashi says flat out in a couple of places, he says, I don't know what they are. He even says a marginal note at the end of Pasuk Gimel. He says, I had no Rav and I had nobody to help me with all of this, only what I was shown Minashamayim. There's an interesting thing also, and then a unique thing about this Perek that you don't find with any other in Tanakh that maybe bears on this as well. So there's a Sefer, a three-volume Sefer called the Torah Ksuvah Vamesorah. The compiler was a Rav in London about 100 years ago. It's an index for every pasuk that's mentioned anywhere in Divrei Chazal of where it's mentioned. So it's a very, very useful resource for looking up. You want to know any drasha that Chazal said on any pasuk anywhere in Tanakh, you can look up in the Sefer and find the references. Anyway, he comes to this Perek, Mem Beis of Yechezkel. He says there's not a single drasha from Chazal on any pasuk in this Perek. So it's almost like Chazal are deliberately like hinting to us, this is not something that we're going to understand so easily until Mashiach actually comes. But we'll see what we can do with it. So the Pasuk starts off, Pasuk Aleph, Vayetzi'eni ala chotzer achitzoyna. Yechezkel describes the Malach took me out to the outer chotzer, haderech, derech hatzofen, by way of the northern gate. So up until now, he was in, throughout Perek Mem Aleph, he was inside the Heichal. He was going around and inside the Heichal and measuring the outside and the inside and whatnot of it. Now he's back in the chotzer. So now the Malach takes him out through this door. The reason is because he wants to visit this Lishka over here. We're going to talk about in later psukim that there's this little one amma entrance to be able to get through over here, but basically otherwise not. Basically otherwise it's closed up. So the easiest way to get to that lishka is to go out over here and then come in through there. So Vayivieni al Lishka, he brought me to the chamber, Asher Neged Gizra, which is opposite the Gizra, which we learned in Perek Mem Aleph, literally means a fortress. It refers to the central part of the basement of the Heichol, the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, of Asher Neged Binyan, and which is also opposite the buildings, meaning the Toyim that are all around the Heichol, El Atzofen on the north side. So this building, this Lishka that he's going to take him to now, is situated on the north side of the Heichol. Pasuk Beis, where is it located in the Chotzer exactly? El Pnei Orech Amos Hamea Pesach Atzofen. It's located in front of the length of 100 Amos of the northern door, which means Rashi says, in other words, when you stand outside the service Lishka, you will see a space left over of the Ezra's Nashim, the Chatzar Achitzayna, a space 100 by 50 equal to the area of the Lishka. You have these chambers in the corners over here, those he's going to only talk about in Perek Mem Vav, so for right now we're ignoring them. But in other words, when you stand here, you have in front of you a space of 50 until the wall, because the space from here to here, he said in Perek Mem was 100 Amos. This is 50 Amos wide, so you have another 50 Amos here. And then you have 100 Amos here and by the Lishka. So that determines where it's located, that helps fix where it's located. That Pesach HaTzofen, and there you have the door to the north. V'haroichav 50 Amos, and the width is 50 Amos, meaning that once you have that chamber placed there, then you have a space of 100 by 50 in the northwest corner of the Azar, left over in the northwest corner of the Chatzar Achitzona next. Then he continues, Pasuk Gimel, Neged Ha'esmi. Now, this large Lishka that we're going to talk about is opposite the 20 Amos Asher L'Chatzar Apnimi, which belongs to the Chatzar Apnimi, which means we learned in the previous Perek, we had a Pasuk that said, Ubein Ha'Moshachas Ruch of Esrim. From the edge of the Heichol until the edge of this Lishka, there's a 20 Amos space. So he's saying that this Lishka over here is placed 20 Amos away from the main body of the Heichol. It's closer over here where you have the Beis HaKhalifa sticks out in this direction and this. It's closer, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But as far as the main body of the Heichol, it's 20 Amos away. Neged Ritzfa Asher L'Chatzar Achitzona. And then he continues, it's also in front of the balcony of the Chatzar Achitzona. We learned in Perek Mem that there's a balcony running all around the Chatzar Achitzona above the gates. And there are small chambers over there that are used for various offices and purposes in this discussion. So now this Lishka is opposite that. It's near that. Then he continues, Atik El Pnei Atik Vashlishim. There is an attic facing towards another attic with the three. Now Rashi says, "What is an attic?" I don't know what that means. Rashi says, and then he says, "So bashlishim." Okay, the Targum Yonistan explains that it means. Targum Yonison explains that it means that it's three stories, that this chamber that we're talking about, here we're only seeing the bird's eye view of it, but in fact it's three stories. But Rashi says that in that case, the following psukim are very hard to understand, where we're going to talk about the respective sizes of the three stories. How would it make a difference? How would it make a difference because there are atikim and what's going on? So here's where Rashi says that I don't understand, and I was only shown minashamayim to be able to understand anything. Then you have in Rashi, there's this long note introduced with the word toisvus that says the word attic over here means a pillar. We had that same term used in previous perek. So therefore, what it means is like this. So here we're talking about these chambers, the one on the north and the one on the south, we'll talk about soon, that are next to the Heichol. They're called in the following psukim, they're called the upper chambers, in the sense that we're going to learn later on, there are other ones towards the east, which are lower down on the mountain, because the mountain slopes up from east to west. What it is like this. Because these chambers, because these lashachas are three stories, therefore you have to have a tikim in order to help hold them up. And we learned in the previous perek, specifically Rashi had said over there, a tikim are pilasters, meaning pillars that are built into the wall and stick part way out of it. So the point is, the following psukim I'm going to tell us, because you have to have those pilasters on the walls, therefore therefore some of the floors have less floor space than they otherwise would. Because like this, you would think you have 100 by 50, so you have 5,000 square amas of floor space, but you don't, because the pilasters, the atikim, take up some of that space. So that would be one way of explaining it. There's a lot of other explanations that different Mefoshim have of what an atik is exactly over here. The Radak says that atik just means a chamber. So it means, in other words, that there's three floors, nothing to do with pillars per se. The Vilna Gaon, his Pirush, says that it means archways. And the Malbim has a whole different explanation. He has this part of the blueprint. He has is laid out completely differently. It's barely anything the same as what you have here in this diagram. Anyway, so he continues. Pasuk Dalet v'lefnei halashochos, in front of halashochos, mahalach eser amos roichav. You have a 10-ama wide walkway elapnimis to go to the inside, derech ama echos, by way of a 1-ama walkway, of hischei hamatzofen, and the entrance way is towards the north. Which means Rashi says like this. So we said that this lishka and this one are 20 amos away from the heichel. But how do you get there? So now the front of the heichel is 100 amos wide, as we learned in Perek Mem Aleph. The whole chotzer apnimi is 100 by 100. So therefore, the front wall of the heichel would close up the entire area. So what they do is they cut off a little piece of the wall over here and over here to have a 1-ama gap to be able to walk through. And you think about it, 1 amma is only like 18 inches, so it's a pretty narrow gap to squeeze through. Then what you do is you come to this area over here. Now, this area over here is 5 ammas wide, because you have, if there's 20 ammas over here and the base of Halifa sticks out 15 ammas, then you only have 5 ammas left. And the length of it is 10 ammas, because the width of the base of Halifa is from east to west is 10 ammas. So in other words, so you're walking through this little gap of 1 amma, then you're reaching an area which is 5 by 10 ammas. You're walking a distance of 10 ammas, and then you come to this wider area of 20 ammas long, and from there you can get into the Lishka. And then he says also, in addition, besides, now the Pasuk doesn't say in so many words that the Lishka has a door over here, but it has to, because otherwise how are you getting into it? But he's saying that it also has a doorway towards the north, meaning to go out directly into the Chatzar Achitzayna. So all of the point is, he's going to say in later Pesukim, all of this area over here, even though it's outside the walls of the Chatzar Achitzayna, all this area, as well as these Lashochas themselves, are all considered an extension of the Chatzar Apnimi, of the Ezras Yisrael / Ezras Koyanim, and therefore you can eat Kodshim, therefore you can eat Kodshe Kodshim over there. If it weren't for that, if you take Kodshe Kodshim through this gap over here and go out over here, they become Pasul, because you brought them outside the Azara. But the point is, all of this area, this and this, and the Lashochas themselves, are all considered an extension of the Azara, and therefore they can cook and eat the Kodshe Kodshim in them. So Yisraelim wouldn't necessarily have a reason to go into those Lashochas. I mean, maybe they would be allowed, maybe not. I don't know. I mean, he's going to say later on that the Kohen, say they're reserved for the Kohen. Would Yisraelim be allowed to go in them? Maybe at least these, since they open up off the Ezra Yisrael, maybe the ones on the west, maybe not. I don't know. By the way, he's going to explain in Perek Mem Vav, you have these four that are in the corner of the Chatzar Achitzayna. He's going to talk about those are meant for the Kodshim Kalim, those that are cooked the Kodshim Kalim, the Shlomim and whatnot, and El Nozer and whatnot, so that are Kodshim Kalim, because those can be in the Chatzar Achitzayna, so those can be eaten anywhere in Yerushalayim. So therefore, they can be in the corners of the Ezras Nashim. Those are similar to, in the second Bais Mikdash, you have the four chambers in the corner of the Ezras Nashim. So here, corresponding to them, you have them also, but he's only going to describe those in Perek Mem Vav, and we're not going to be learning that over here. Continuing. Pasuk Hey, Ba'al Lashochas Hel Yonis Kitzuros. The upper Lashochas are shortened. Are shortened or smaller, because the atikim take up space from them, from the lower ones and from the middle ones, they take up space. So here is what Rashi was saying before. I don't understand what's going on over here. Why are the upper chambers narrower because what are atikim and what exactly is going on? So that added note in Rashi explains that Elyonus over here doesn't mean the third floor as opposed to the floors below it. It means the upper Lashochas as opposed to the ones that are in the diagram over here through the east, which we'll talk about later on in the Perek. They're upward because they're further up on the mountain. And we're saying that because you have a tikkun, because you have these pilasters built into the walls to help hold up the walls, because the walls are very tall and otherwise they wouldn't be stable. So therefore, the result is that you have less floor space on the bottom floor and on the middle floor. The Mitzvot David talks about in particular that these pilasters may have been made in sort of a triangular shape. So they narrow as you go up, because by the time you get further up to the top of the building, you don't need them as much because you don't have as much weight pressing down on the masonry anyway. But on the bottom two floors, you need them to be wide so they'll hold up the building. So therefore on the bottom floor and on the middle floor, you have less floor space than it would seem from the diagram. So that would be the meaning of Pasuk Hey, basically. And then he continues, Pasuk Vav, Ki Meshuboshes Heina, because these chambers are three stories. And here also Rashi says, Lo Hevanti Bahem Klal, I don't understand what we're saying. So we're mainly following that marginal note in Rashi. So Ki Meshuboshes Heina, they're three stories. The Ein Lehen Amudim Ka Amudei Achatzeres, they don't have regular pillars like the pillars that you have in courtyards, meaning you often have in various places in Shas, we have, for example, you'll have a chotzer that houses open into, and around the edges of the chotzer, you'll have pillars that will hold up a roof around them, and you'll have what the Gemara calls in many places an achsabra. So you'll have like a partial roof over the edges of the chotzer, and the leading edge of it is held up with pillars. But here, when it's a three-story building, you can't have that. Those kinds of pillars won't work to help hold it up. Instead, you need those pilasters built into the walls themselves. Therefore, there is space removed from the bottom and from the middle floors of these three stories. There's space that's taken up by these atikim, these pillars. That therefore you have less floor space than you otherwise would, because you need them in order to be able to hold up the whole building and to be able to hold up the top floor. In other words, in a certain sense, we're saying, you know, sort of like you think of, let's say, you know, back when they renovated and expanded 770 back in the early nuns. So they have, you know, they have the different, you have the pillars here and there throughout 770, where they talked about removing them at the time because they're getting in people's way and people can't see and everything. In the event, they left them because you need something in order to hold up the ceiling. So here, in a similar vein, we're saying because it's a tall three-story building, therefore you need pillars here and there to help hold it up, and not just pillars like the kind you have in Chatzeris, but much bigger ones. So therefore you have a certain amount of floor space that gets taken up by them and is not available for what you would otherwise want to use these lashachas for. Then he continues, Pasuk Zayin, the Goder Asher Lachutz. Then there is a fence, meaning a wall, towards the outside, L'umas HaLashachas, towards the opposite the Lashachas. So here Rashi says that we're talking about that you have. So here we're talking about. Till now we were talking about the Lashachas. Now we're talking about the wall of them that separates them from the rest of the Chotzer. Meaning, it seems what Rashi means to say is, in other words, now we're going to describe this wall and this wall over here. Till now we were talking about the Lishka as a whole. Now we're talking about there was a wall on this side to separate it from the rest of the Chotzer. Because after all, this has to be a self-contained area for the Kohenim to use as an extension of the Chotzer Apnimi. If there wasn't a wall here, then you wouldn't have that. So therefore, there needs to be, of necessity, a wall over there to separate it from the Chotzer Achitzonah. El Pnei HaLashachas, in front of the Lashachas. Okay, Chamishim Amah, the length of that wall is 50 Amos running from north to south. And he continues, Pasuk Ches, Ki Orach HaLashachas Asher L'Chotzer HaChitzonah Chamishim Amah, the length of the Lashachas as they are in the Chotzer HaChitzonah is 50 Amos, meaning because they're located in the Chotzer HaChitzonah, they take up 50 Amos of space over there. And in the other direction, in the other dimension, they're equal in size to the heichal, which is 100 amah, the same way as we learned previously that the entire heichal, beis hachalifas and all, amounts to 100 amahs from east to west. The same way these lashachas are exactly the same, 100 amahs from east to west, and sitting there opposite to exactly parallel to the heichal. Yom Yom Mashiach Geula, Beis Menachemov. People ask, we never talked about in the Sikha, what do you mean? How can we talk about that in Mashiach's times, all the Jewish people will come into the Kodesh HaKadoshim? The Rebbe talked about in the Sikhas over there, that all Jews will be in the Beis HaMikdash and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. What do you mean? I mean, the Pasuk says, only Aaron and the Kohenim Golan go in there, and only on Yom Kippur, and only they have to bring special korbanos. So the answer is that Abbott starts talking about, look, first of all, you have opinions that Aaron HaKohen was able to go in there whenever he wants. Not just on Yom Kippur, maybe later Kohenim Golim are restricted on Yom Kippur only, but he himself could go in anytime he wants. So later on, in the time of Mashiach, all the Jewish people will be on the level of Kohenim Golim, because after all, Vatim Tilim, Amlach is Kohenim. So then, moving with Gam Poshet, that every Yid belongs in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, because after all, if he could be in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, why would he be anywhere else? Then the piece for tomorrow, which we're not going to be here tomorrow to learn, but the Rebbe gives another answer that, look, they're going to have to go in there right away to bring in the Oran and the Luchas and put it into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And for that purpose, everybody is able to go in there the same way as when you're repairing the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then everybody can go in there. So by the same token, then you can have people, regular people will be going in there as well to do that. Continuing on Halachas of travel. By the way, yesterday when we talked about a couple of dinim as far as travel and as far as benching and whatever, Rabbi Elzebub asked me to remind everybody also, you have the dinim as far as making a bracha achrona, that it has to be in the same place where you ate. And if you go into a different room, for example, then you have complications. And sometimes even you need to say a separate before bracha again. So when traveling also, this is something to keep in mind. Some people have the minhag when they're traveling and they're eating in a goy's house, then they don't make a mezuman because it's not considered a kibbutz. Still, though, it's not right to do that. And then you should still say the regular harachmans, and if the food belongs to one person, you can still say bala bais hazeh. Okay, or minhag, as we say bala bais hazeh regardless. And you would say that's when you put in the line. That's when you put the two words bnei bris in there, which you have in parenthesis, and nobody knows what those are there for, but that's what it's there for when you're eating and there are goyim around.